Blog Talk Radio.
Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the
Texas weather does.
Yeah, that's no fun.
So I'm still fighting the cold that I have, that I've had for about a week and a half. But other than that, I can't complain. Had a great Thanksgiving. Ate way too much. Way too much, Chevy.
Yeah.
And
yeah, Thanksgiving was yummy. I ate a lot, too.
Yeah. So it was a good time seeing my nieces and my brother and his wife and mom and dad. And so that was good. Watched a lot of football over the weekend. I was off from Wednesday evening till yesterday. So I had a four-day weekend, so I enjoyed it. And, you know, I talked about how I, myself and the remainder of my team, we've kind of taken a sabbatical. We've kind of stepped out of the paranormal for the time being, per se, and concentrating a little bit on doing some things together, paranormal, you know, doing a little ghost hunting here and there, but nothing mainstream, nothing, you know, crazy. And it's amazing how God works in mysterious ways, because my website's not up, nothing, you know, and clients somehow or another got a hold of me, and the family was having some horrific things happening. They moved into this house about 3 months ago. They're renting it. They don't actually own it. And in a way of saying it, they stepped into a shitstorm. And you know, it's crazy how we meet people on the show, Jody. We have guests, and then they end up getting involved in our lives and helping us out. And I was just sitting there at the client's house, and there was a lot of weird vibes. I was getting a lot of not so great feelings being there, and I was like, man, I got to reach out to somebody. I got to have some help on this. So I reached out to Miss Bishop Christina Rake that was on our show a couple weeks ago, and man, she's been working her tail off helping me out. And once again, Jody, another demonic case has fallen into my lap.
Mm-mm-mm.
And it's confirmed by Christina. We were kind of on our guard with it. What's unique about it is the family, the mother, the kids, they all are sensitive. They can see, hear, feel spirits. So it's even worse in a way, because they can see this evilness, you know, and it's been disguising itself. They thought they were talking to a little girl, which you hear that a lot on these kind of cases, and the little girl doesn't exist. They're talking to Mr. Nasty himself. So I was on the client right before the show, and they're not living there right now. They're at her parents' house, so they're probably going to move.
Wow.
Because the evil in this case is not attached to any of them. The evil is attached to the land. The land goes back so far, there's not even a lot of records of all the horrific things. We've come across rape, child abuse, animal sacrifice, playing with a Ouija board, doing rituals, burning of stuff. All kinds of things, Jody, and that's what we're dealing with.
Yeah, who knows what you're going to stumble upon, right?
Yeah, and I'm even going to talk to one of our other friends that you and I know that's a demonologist, and see if there's any way of fixing this property, you know, because the family, we're not going to have to help. They're going to get out. But I'm worried about the next family that decides to rent this house. They're going to have the same problem.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing that I've learned about realtors is, like, they will not disclose haunting. Even though by law they are supposed to, They won't.
Well, you know, and the landlord actually, the one that owns the home, actually stayed in the home for a while and, you know, is renting it. This landlord will not step foot on the property. He don't want to have anything to do with that property. And so, yeah. Craziness, Jody.
Wow.
God tapped on my door and said, "Hey, dude, you're not getting out of the paranormal. You just think you are."
Right.
Yeah, because I had another person call me up that we investigated like 2.5 years ago. I made a bunch of DVDs for this historic site and told them if they ever needed copies, if they wanted to sell them at their ghost walks and whatnot, that they just need to hit me up. 2.5 years later, on the same day I get the client case, that person calls and orders 20 copies of that episode. 2.5 years later.
Mm-mm-mm.
And then 3 days later, a hotel in Arkansas, Eureka Springs, where the Crescent Hotel is, very haunted
yeah.
location in northern Arkansas, they
yeah.
contacted me having a paranormal event up there, and they wanted my team to come.
Yeah.
So you see the pattern, Jody? I even lay low, and people find me.
Yeah. It happens.
Yeah. But other than that, that's pretty much been my week. Me and my dad and my good friend Jeff and also my co-host on Sunday, we went on a little ghost hunt. When was that? Friday night. And went to this old-ass cemetery. And it was so old that there was bodies there that were found prior to, like, somebody adopting that cemetery, and all they have is little crosses as their marker.
Mm-hmm.
They don't actually have a headstone.
Yeah.
But we had a lot of activity, and I actually saw a ball of light floating across the cemetery, and it just disappeared right in front of us. That was kind of crazy. So, other than that, you know, craziness in the news, you know.
Oh, you want to hear
people
some? Talk.
Go for it. Or
okay.
A guest called Zen.
All right. So we'll start off with okay, 262 pounds of marijuana fell from the sky.
Damn.
Yeah. Over San Diego, two people were arrested. And I guess you could say they were kind of flying high.
Yeah.
Yep. Gangsta immigrants. There you have it, some Mexicans dropping off some dope. 262 pounds. Then, over the desert, over 13 miles long, there was a craft circle that appeared.
Really?
In the desert. Yes, in the desert in the middle of nowhere. On December the 2nd, it was discovered. And it's pretty interesting.
Sweet.
It was
now,
very, very 13 miles long.
That's crazy.
Gigantic. Okay, and then before we bring her on, there's one more thing I have to say.
Go for it.
There is a woman that is shoving a ball of yarn up her vagina, and then she is knitting it for 28 days. So so that she can have her cycle on it.
What?
And every day she pulls more string out and she adds to it, but she can't do anything. She can't leave her house for a month so that she can sit there and knit from her vagina.
That's crazy.
Another thing real quick. A four-star general has confessed that the Roswell crash was, in fact, an ET event. But we already kind of knew that. But, yeah, this man just died, and before he died, he made the confession.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Pretty crazy. All right.
Our guest tonight, I'm going to read a little bit about her, and then we'll bring her on. Pull it up here. Our guest tonight is Kimberly Roulette, author. She earned her B.S. in Earth Science Geology from the University of North Carolina at Charlotte, and an M.A. in Biblical Studies from Trinity Theological College and Seminary. She has been editor and contributing editor for numerous published books. Kimberly works for a traditional publishing company while working on other writing and editing projects. This includes the thrilling mystery trilogy, the Monastery Murder series with Karen Vance Hammond. In addition to her literary pursuits, she is a skilled graphic designer with over 22 years of experience in creating book covers, creative designs, marketing campaigns, and multimedia productions. Kimberly enjoys reading, writing, music, traveling, and spending time with her loved ones. And if you want to find out more about her, you can visit goodsread.com/Kimberly_Roulette. Also available from this author is Abram's Journey, Quest for the Man in the Stars. And that's a little bit about our guest, and we're going to bring her on now. Kimberly,
hi, everybody.
There?
Good evening. Yeah, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing good. Hey, Jody, I haven't spoken with you in a while.
I know, it's been a long time.
Yeah, I haven't seen you. Has it been since the Stanley?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. That's like a year and a half ago. I can't believe it's been that long.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
So how is everybody? Did everybody have a good Thanksgiving?
Yeah, did you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had a lot of my family here and had a nice time. It was fairly relaxing, actually. I didn't do the shopping thing. I just delved into some projects and stuff, and me and Chris worked on some brainstorming. That was, you know, that was actually fun. So
good.
But I'm kind of excited because you might have seen the pictures, but he's on Sleepy Hollow. And he's actually on the set right now, I think he's left the set now, but he was on there earlier for Sleepy Hollow. So it's been pretty cool. He's got his Revolutionary War uniform on and everything. So
nice.
So
that's awesome.
So,
yeah, I love that
it was
show.
Kind of neat.
Yeah,
it's actually a pretty good show, isn't it?
Yeah, I like it. I'm pretty addicted to it.
Except for they need some consultants because they called a warlock a male witch. They assumed that a male witch was a warlock, and they were in a coven, so that wasn't the true term. So anyway, that's the one thing I found wrong. I was like, wait a minute, you got that wrong. So,
well, you know, that's TV.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, a lot of people make that mistake, but I just thought, I was like, damn, they didn't get it right, though. But that's one thing, you know, with writing and stuff, and this is something that Karen and I recently, you know, we released our paperback edition finally
of the Secrets in the Shallows. So that's the first of a trilogy, and it's a murder mystery.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, one of the best things, or most one of the significant things about writing is that you make sure that you get the details right. You know, if you got information on if there's a cult or something like that, you want the details to be right. You've got to do your research.
Absolutely.
And,
there's nothing more embarrassing than when you put something out and you allow, like, other people to do it and they, like, mess it up. I've had that happen.
Right.
And it's like, oh, my God, I'm glad I spent so much time on doing that and giving instructions, and you just decided
mm-hmm.
to change it because you felt differently, which you felt was wrong. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
So, I mean, it's important. The details are important. In fact, the second book we are actually calling, the name of the second book is called Devil in the Details. So, but the details are really important, and that's, you know, I don't know, have either one of y'all read any of, I'm just curious, I don't know if either one of you have gotten a chance to check out the book or the prologue or anything yet.
Sure haven't. Yeah, I was
going
to ask if you would tell us a little bit more about what you just released.
Well, Secrets in the Shallows is the first book of a trilogy in the Monastery Murder series, and it's set up in Maine, and basically this series of murders takes place. But you don't, you know, the whole key is this major intertwined story as to the reason why these murders takes place and how they're connected with all the characters and everything. So you have this small town, and, you know, you think you know what's going on, but it's really, you really just don't have a clue what's going on with regard to that. So, but I can basically, you know, I could read you the prologue if you'd like to give
sure.
you a kind of a taste for what it is.
Sure.
Sure.
Okay. Okay, well, this is the prologue for the first book, Secrets in the Shallows. Dense fog blanketed the canopy of autumn trees arrayed in a myriad of yellows, oranges, and reds. From the distance, ghostly wails from a foghorn resounded throughout the valley. Its melancholy sound sliced through the silent evening air as its vibrations crept up the lighthouse's spiral staircase. In the lantern room at the top, the Fresnel stood sentinel, rotating endlessly and casting its beams of light out into the water. Anchored in the bay below, lobster boats gently rocked back and forth in the surf while the ominous storm clouds encroached upon them. A large black crow landed on the shoulder of a marble statue of the Blessed Mother Mary, standing watch over the monastery lawn. Dangling from the sacred maternal hands, a long strand of rosary beads swung back and forth in the coming storm's steady breeze. Loud calling emanated from the bird's black beak as it spread its wings and flapped them vigorously. The feathered hunter took only a moment to study its surroundings before flying away to find a safe haven from the storm. Rumblings of thunder filled the air as several streaks of lightning ocean in the distance. Light winds began to swell and howl while passing by the beautifully arched monastery windows. Raindrops steadily tapped on the colored panes of grass, echoing throughout the quarters as the storm began its descent upon the campus. Suddenly, another loud booming noise erupted as the monastery door was thrust open by a nun, frantically fleeing from the entrance. Dressed in a dark burgundy habit, she ran down the front steps, flailing her arms and screaming, "No, get away from me!" Only seconds behind, a taller nun in the black habits clutching a short-handled battle axe with gloved hands while chasing after the escaping sister. The dark figure slipped on the wet grass while scurrying after the nun as she fled. Regaining her footing, the nun in black continued to pursue the fleeing prey as the rain began to come down in torrents. The frantic one ran for her life into the woods as her screams for help disappeared into the wind like a smoke on a winter gale. Her burgundy habit flailed out behind her as she tried to escape. Evergreen branches slapped her face and scratched her arms as she tried to elude her pursuer. The nun's only goal was to find a safe place to hide. As the terrorized woman ran through the woods, a low-lying branch caught her headpiece, exposing her long, beautiful blonde hair, now being drenched in rainwater. Looking back through the blinding sheets of rain, she was lost in a sea of branches and tree trunks. Turning to run again, she immediately slammed into her stalker. Tears burst from her blue eyes as the look of absolute terror and recognition came upon her. "Please let me go. Why are you doing this?" The ghastly nun peered into her eyes with disgust and grabbed her arms so hard that she could feel her nails claw into her skin. Desperate to get away, the smaller nun tried to wrench her arm free, but could not escape from the dark nun's grasp. Immediately, the assailant ordered in a strong voice through gritted teeth, "On your knees, sister." Panicking, the nun emphatically pleaded, "No, please don't do this. What have I done to deserve this?" Falling to her knees and with her palms pressed together in the front of her, she begged, "Please don't hurt me. You know I love you as if you were family." The dark nun mocked, "What have you done to deserve this? You really don't know?" Without hesitation, a hand brutally slapped the nun's cheek. Mud covered the side of her face as the nun fell. Her long blonde hair sprayed out onto the wet ground. Frantically attempting to get up, the final thing the frightened nun saw was the sharpened battle axe blade swinging towards her. The look of complete surprise was locked on her face as her head landed on the ground. Her wide opened eyes blinked twice as her mouth voiced a silent protest. Her lifeless body slumped in the mud and landed beside it. Deep red blood spilled out from her severed neck into rain puddles all around her. Deliberately, the murderer trudged through the mud to where the nun's habit hung loosely on the branch of a gnarled old tree. Lifting it up in the rain, the killer inspected the headpiece for any tears before shoving it into a large pocket. Still holding the bloodied axe, the murderer turned to look at the victim one last time, then slipped silently through the trees and faded away into the shadows. Somewhere in the dark at night, restless eyes twitched erratically beneath their slumbering lids. An eerie moan slipped between the chapped lips of his confinement. In the dreamer's mind, a rising wail of anguish rose to join with a booming clap of thunder. Violently, the figure bolted from bed as the white flash of lightning drove the shadows from the room and momentarily blinded the once sleeping eyes. And that's the prologue for Secrets in the Shallows.
Now, did you write this alone, or did you?
No. Karen Van Tammen and I partnered up on this, and this was actually based on this initial scene right here was a dream that she had. She actually had this dream.
Wow.
And she said it was one of the worst dreams she's ever had in her life. It was she actually dreamed of some nun chasing after her with a battle axe, literally. And so about a year and a half ago, or a little over a year and a half ago, she came to me, and she had needed an editor. And at first, that's where, you know, what it started out to be. But she sent me what she had, and it was, you know, it was really good. As far as the first version of it, you know, it was really good. And we just, as we talked about it and we got involved in more discussions and everything, we just started coming up with additional storylines that we both, you know, we were talking and we're coming up with all sorts of ideas, and what if we did this and what if we did that, and, you know, and it just, how can we make the story even a level above where it is now? And
right.
So what we ended up doing was, you know, we kept working off of each other, and then I would also bounce things off of Chris at home too and get his opinion, because he had a lot of military knowledge and ammunition and all sorts of stuff that, you know, I could ask him about. So I had a wealth of knowledge there, which was awesome. And so we would sit there and talk about all these different ideas. And so what we ended up doing was taking her initial story which was still pretty long. It was a full length. It was about 70,000 words, and we ended up expanding that into two books. And we basically doubled the size of it and split it in half. And then when we got finished with it, we were like, okay, I said, well, what if we go back and we talk about the kind of like the reason why this person went nuts, you know, what made this person what they are. So we do this full circle thing where this person, first of all, in the first book, you find out what happened. You find out about the murders and you find out about the different things that took place, but you don't necessarily understand why they take place. Mm-hmm. And then the second one, you find out more about the who and a little bit of the why. But the third one is the third book, which we have yet to be sure what our name is. The second one is going to be Devil in the Details. But the third one is going to be about the going back in, you know, partially back into the killer's history. It's going to have flashbacks and it's going to come back and forth so that you understand why this person became, you know, why they became the person, how twisted they are. And it does mm-hmm. make sense. This story does make sense, but you don't necessarily understand all the components in the first book. So it's thread is going to go throughout all three books. So it's, you know, there, if there's something that's brought up in the first book that we don't bring out, you know, completely, just know that we will deal with it at some point.
Nice. That's exciting. So how are you guys doing with this?
Oh, we're doing really good. Actually, this weekend, I checked, and from what I could tell, we sold around 35, 40 Kindles alone. So that didn't include paperbacks. So I thought that was pretty decent for a weekend. And but the thing is that this woman that gets killed in this prologue, and this is where kind of where the paranormal thing comes in. The woman that's killed, that nun, she becomes a ghost. And mm-hmm. so in the story, she is actually going to help with the investigation at some point. She's going to keep the people on the right track in order for them to find the answers. Because she has mm-hmm. a genuine reason to want them to find the answers, you know, because she was killed by this person, you know. So... but there's going to be more deaths involved. There's going to be some unexpected deaths at some point. And there's going to be a lot of twists and turns that you just – we wanted to intentionally have it so that it had lots of these – we think you know what the answer is, and then we'd fool you. You know, we want there to be those twists and turns. And and that's what we've tried to do.
Very nice.
With regard to that.
How many books have you written or helped write, partnered up with?
I've actually been on the cover of two of them. The other book was Abram's Journey, Quest for the Man in the Stars, and that's where my biblical studies came in more, because I did a lot of studying when I was doing biblical studies. It was more about a lot about the historical aspect and archaeology as well, and
mm-hmm.
Languages and stuff. So I did a lot of research in that regard. And when we actually wrote the book, what we did was I actually wrote it with my mom, believe it or not. And mm-hmm. she had this idea of the story, but we basically did like a year's worth of research before we began, and I was in that library almost like several hours every week, hours and hours every week, mm-hmm. just making copies, you know. This was before the internet, or before when we were doing a lot of this research, and or at least the availability of it as it is now, you know. It took longer to send those files, and so... the, you know, we had hundreds and hundreds of copies. And but there's been probably a total of about 25, 26 books that I've actually either edited or been contributing editor or actually helped write. So,
wow.
I work for a traditional publishing company, and I've done editing for several books for them. Probably the biggest name that, and my mind's going to go blank right now. I'll think of it in a minute, of course. As soon as I said that, I was like, wait a minute, my mind's gone blank.
That
author said, I can Google it real quick.
You know, I have had a lot of people approach me about writing a book, and I haven't followed through with any of them because it's just like, I don't know. I don't know who to believe on what, you know, they say they can do. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
There's so many bullshit talkers out there.
Oh, yeah. Well,
but I thought about writing some books. I think I could write some killer books.
The thing is just spending the time and getting the, you know, that's one thing. It eats your time. It eats your time a lot if you want to get it out. Otherwise, I mean, that's the reason why so many people take some 3, 4, or 5 years to get a book written, you know, because they just do it kind of on their spare time, and there's never hardly any spare time. So, what I ended up doing was for about 14 months, almost every single night from about 10 o'clock until 1 o'clock in the morning. Basically, that was my writing time and my editing time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Karen and I basically sent it back and forth. You know, we would send a chapter back and forth, and I would work on it some, and she would work on it some, and we'd both contribute to the end result. I feel very good about what we produced. I'm very proud of it. And you know, when it comes to you know, working with her, it's been a really great experience. Because she has a lot of creative ideas, and she's got a lot to contribute. I don't know if you know this, but she actually had some learning disabilities. She was actually in the slower classes when she was in school, and she worked her way up to be able to finally. She went to college, and she did a lot of things, and she was also a foster child, and then she was finally adopted. She was an orphan. And so she, you know, she went through a lot of things in herself, and I'm very proud of her for having gotten past those and overcome all those challenges and still been able to, you know, to write. You know, most people wouldn't. She's partially deaf, you know, in one ear. And so to overcome all those learning disabilities and everything, and she's dyslexic, and so, you know, working with her has been an interesting challenge, but it's been wonderful because we've become very good friends, and it's you know, I feel like we complement each other very well in what we do. So she normally would be here tonight, but she has to get up extremely early, and it's. She needs to get to bed fairly early during the school week, you know, during the work week. She's a teacher.
Yeah.
So. But But there's go ahead.
No, I was going to say you were talking about writing time in the evening, and several years ago, because I was a teacher for about 9 years, teaching high school, and I have a Bachelor of Arts degree in theater, you know, so I've been in hundreds of plays and acted and been in a couple extras and movies and stuff, but at the time I had a girlfriend, and she was going through a lot of rough things in her life, and she had an accident on a four-wheeler, and it fractured her skull, and it gave her amnesia, partial amnesia.
Wow.
And she didn't even know who I was, you know. To go to being, you know, being I love you, this, that, another, to who the hell are you? So there was that time in my life. So I was like, you know what, I'm gonna write down everything that we've experienced, everything that she's told me about her life, and make it into a play. And at some point, I'm going to let her read it, and maybe it'll trigger something, you know, because it's going to have a lot of her life that she's told me about in it, and a way to remember it. And so I wrote this play. It's about an hour and a half. I got to go back and edit it some more and add more backstory to the characters. But, yeah, it's got every twist and turn you could possibly imagine, because there's a lot of real life to this, and there's spousal abuse, what a woman goes through, physical and mental abuse, and raising a autistic child at the same time, and just all these twists and turns, and majority of it is actual true story, you know? So I did that a lot at night. I put aside a couple hours a night, and it took me about 4 months to write what I did. And now a few years later, I'm just like, you know, I should open that thing back up and add more to it and try to get it out there and get it published.
Well, if you feel like you should, then you know, there's no time like the present on that, you know, as far as, you know, I've started saying why not instead of why. I found that it...
Do you feel like it's worth it? Like, I mean, you know, the time that you put into it, are you getting your return?
Well, I mean, there's different kinds of return. I mean, as far as satisfaction, yes.
Yeah.
Because I feel like these are some of the reviews that we've gotten back from, like, Michael Rivers, author of The Black Witch and The Ghosts of North Carolina Shores, and he said, well-written mystery with vivid descriptions that keep you turning the pages. And Bill Bean, you know him. He's an author, lecturer, media personality. He said, Karen and Kimberly have written a winner. Secrets in the Shallows is a hard book to put down and will keep you on the edge of your seat page after page. And R.K. Weigel, author of The Strayless Chronicles, says, I couldn't put the book down. The gripping murder mystery is a cleverly woven tapestry with all the right threads. So when you get other people, you know, after you've put all that effort into it and you have other people that come to you, I mean, say, we really enjoyed your book. When are you going to write the second one? That is the reward.
Yeah.
You know, yes, you know, it'll be great if I make a lot of money. Sure. You know, I'm not going to turn down money if it does make a lot of money. Don't get me wrong.
Well, you understand the business. You want to make money, you know, I mean.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
that's
that's not the satisfaction part that I get. The satisfaction is that people actually enjoy what we're writing, and that we're contributing something that they actually appreciate, and it in its own form of like an art form in a sense. And because the way we write it, one of the things that that I wanted to make sure, and Karen as well, was that you feel like you're there. You know, you don't feel like you're looking through a plate glass window and looking at it from a mile away. You actually, you know, you feel your mind, you can sense what is going on. You know what it looks like. You know about the winds. You know about the weather. You know about, you know, all these things. And even later, as it gets into the book, you understand the thoughts of the characters and stuff. You know, you have the lawyer that is, you know, trying the case, and, you know, or, you know, that's the district attorney that is, you know, working with the sheriff, and you have all these different characters that are working together, and you have the, you know, the handsome, you know, detectives, and you have, you know, all these different guys and these women in there, and they're all contributing their own. They become a person. And in a way, because you as you're writing these type of stories with fiction, you can create whatever. You're not stuck with whatever you have to portray. So you can – that's kind of the fun of that particular writing, is that you can do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
And your imagination is your limitation. And so as you get these characters and you get to know these characters, it's also a reward in just developing the characters and saying, oh, I actually like that character, or I hate that character, you know?
Right.
So –
yeah,
but
and you're, you know, in writing a book like that, as a writer, you have to kind of paint a picture so that when the reader's reading, you know, they get that picture in their mind, and, like you said, mm-hmm. and they're actually there. And like mm-hmm. I said, with my style being in theater and whatnot, if I got satisfaction, it wouldn't be. I would love to get it published just for the simple fact that then. People out there could actually perform it and actually see what I created come to life on stage, you know, as living, breathing characters. That's the ultimate, for, you know, that would be for me, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, my style of writing is it has, you know, they go through these emotions and they have to show it. And the audience will actually go on this roller coaster along with the characters on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And, mm-hmm. you know, you have to do it, you know, through the book, which I love those kind of books because,
mm-hmm.
well, I love them and I hate them because when I start reading them, then damn it, everything else is secondary and I can't put the damn book down.
Yeah, I understand. It's like you get lost in it. And that's it, you know, it's like you've given somebody kind of a mental vacation for a few hours, you know, and, you know, for... the little bit of money that, you know, it costs, you know, it's well worth it.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the, you know, the other thing that we do that I feel like is important is that we actually write the book from different perspectives. And some people were like, how do you do that? You know, how do you actually do that? And so what we do is we actually break the chapter, like we'll have a chapter. And then we'll have this break in the chapter with a bunch of asterisks. And whenever that happens, more than likely either there's a time break or there's a location break. And so with the location, there might be some stuff going on, you know, like when you're watching a show on TV and you have different scenes and you have, you know, one scene that'll have certain characters and you have other scenes that have other characters. And that's basically what we did with the book, is that we had, if there was different things going on at the same time, then we would go back and forth between the two, and it's not done in a way that it gets confusing. At least I haven't been told that it does. And I'll give you a little hint on book two. There's one of the murders that is discussed in book one of one of the, there's these teenage boys that are killed, but you don't actually see the murders necessarily, all of the murders in book one. You see some of the murders. Well, at the second book, it's actually going to open with one of the murders that you don't see. And in that scene, we actually have it come from three perspectives. So you have, and the individual only can see and hear what they would have access to. So you have the killer who is actually obviously killing the person and the boy, and you have the boy that's being killed, and then you have the witness. So all these three things are going on at the same time, and so it'll go back and forth. And like, as say the one boy becomes unconscious because he's been strangled, and because he's unconscious, then his part goes out because he's unconscious. So he doesn't have any input, you know, but people see him. So the witness will see, you know, who's a friend of his sees him get killed, but he can't see who's killing his friend. You know, he can only see so much in the dark because it's too dark. You know, all they can see is certain things and hear certain things. And so we have this murder scene that is basically coming from all three. And it's, you actually, as the boy is being killed, you know, you hear his thoughts as he's being killed, you know. And so it's kind of like, you know, I think a different way of writing than maybe that would be typical. Because of that, you know, coming from different perspectives. So it's kind of like, did you ever have that? I think it's called Vantage Point, where I don't necessarily think that the entire movie was really good, but the concept was really good, was where you had one assassination, but you had about 8 different perspectives. You had 8 different witnesses to the same event.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's the same kind of thing, but in book form, and then it's only 3. You know, in that particular instance, it's only 3 characters. So, but it's been a lot of fun. I mean, I enjoy writing. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask you. You know, since you put, you know, some paranormal aspects in there as well. You yourself, have you ever experienced anything paranormal?
I've got me and my fiance we started our own group a number of years ago, and it's Research Institute of the Paranormal, and we actually have done our own web show as well called What Lies Beyond. And so we've actually done a web show, you know, episode for that, and done some other evidence and stuff. We've done a lot of speaking because the reason why we got into this in the first place was Chris has been haunted since he was 5.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was almost nightly, basically, was tormented for years. And it was in an era, it was a lot different than it is now, where there's a lot more openness to the paranormal now than there was 40 years ago.
Yeah.
30, 40 years ago, it was like taboo, completely taboo.
Yeah,
people thought you were completely nuts.
Yeah. Like,
and
you're just imagining.
You got this 5-year-old kid, and every night he's got these spirits that come in and destroy his room. And sit there, and they sit there, and they talk all night long. He said he got to the point, he still does this. He puts his arm over his ear, like he puts it over his ear, and he lays on one side so that his exposed ear is covered with his arm. Because the spirits, he learned to do that because the spirits would keep him up all night. So, and he said one of the reasons that he thought he was going crazy until he actually heard one of his brothers who talked in his sleep have a conversation with the spirit in his sleep.
Wow.
So he knew at that point that he was like, wait, okay, so at least, you know, I know I'm not dreaming here. And so, you know, we have our own blog series that he actually talks about, you know, a lot of his experiences, or at least a good collage of them, of experiences that happened to him when he was a boy. And then what happened was when he was 10 years old, he ended up, one of these spirits we call Red, we think it's basically a spirit guide, came in and drove the bad spirits away after he had tried to commit suicide 3 times when he was 10 years old. And so he had attempted, because he just felt completely at his wit's end. He didn't know what to do. He wasn't eating. He wasn't sleeping. He wasn't able to pay attention in class. He was just, you know, he didn't know. And then Red came in and basically drove the rest of the spirits away. And And we believe that there's a good chance that there were some other instances where, you know, he probably saved his life, even in Iraq when he was in Desert Storm. So, and he writes about that as well. So, and I've had plenty of experiences myself. I was already into the paranormal before I met him. In fact, when I saw my dad pass away about 19, 18 years ago, I saw him pass away, and when he did, he actually lifted up, and he smiled after being in a coma for 6 hours. And he smiled, and he looked up, and he just had this really bright smile on his face, and then he lifted his shoulders up, and then he was gone. And that's when I started working on my, basically I started speaking my own answers out, and that's when I got my master's degree in biblical studies. To be honest, you know, that was one of the things that that I went there for, because I was trying to seek answers. And with Chris, he was trying to seek his own answers. He was going to libraries and doing all sorts of research before the internet was available. You know, he was doing his own type of studies. And when we got together and he had had all these experiences, but we actually had a lot after we got together from about 6 months out from the time we met. We had paranormal experience for a solid 2.5-3 years, almost every day. You know, it's calmed down since then. But there was one instance where there was like almost a demonic, I'm not sure if it was demonic or not, but it was definitely close enough, okay? It was a malevolent spirit, if nothing else. And it was this, I was sitting there on the end of the bed, and I was talking to Chris, and he was sitting on where he normally sit, and we both heard this guttural growl. And I'm sure you got the picture of what I'm talking about, you know, that really deep, low, guttural, you know, growl, yeah. Deeper and louder, you know. And it was so close, I could feel it. Actually on my right shoulder behind me. I could tell where they were standing. They were right there, and I could feel the vibration on my neck and in my ear, and I could, you know, it was just right there, and I was like a deer in the headlights. I couldn't move, and I looked at Chris, and he looked at me, and I was. I knew he could see in my eyes. I was like, did you hear that? You know? And as soon as I was about to say that something, and it happened again, and I jumped and I landed in his arms, and I was like, hold me. Chris basically told it to get out and to go, and it did. And about a week later, it tried to pull me off the bed in the middle of the night. So, and I was literally hanging in the air, hovering in the air. I was calling for Chris, and as I called for Chris, the thing started pulling my leg, and I was being pulled off the bed with just my right leg. My other leg was dangling, and Chris had his hands under my arms pulling me back, and so basically I'm like this human tightrope or tug of war. And I'm sitting there hovering between the spirit and Chris. And so what ended up happening was Chris, you know, took authority over, but he also asked, in this case, and it was one of the first times we did this, is we actually asked Red for help.
Mm-hmm.
And it never came back. And we had a week of activity where we kept hearing boxes being thrown in the closet and the hangers being moved back and forth and things and walking across the floor and the doors being open and running in front of the bedroom door and stuff. And we were hearing all that stuff for a solid week where it was really, really active. And there was like three spirits in the house, but this one was different. And after we did that, he didn't come. He didn't. At least we didn't have any mean spirited attacks like we had. So, So you ask if I have had a paranormal experience.
Yes, you have.
I've had quite many, but I mean, most of them have not been bad, though. Most of the experiences I've had have not been bad experiences. They've been, you know, we've done investigations. We've helped people as much as we could. You know, when we were asked to help people, we've gone in, and because Chris was haunted, you know, he was tormented. So we have kind of a soft place in our heart for the kids that are going through all this.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's no point in a 10-year-old trying to commit suicide. That's just wrong.
Yeah.
You know? And if we can help prevent one kid, you know, from committing suicide because we reached out to them,
yeah,
you know, with the right intent, and we, you know, we don't look at them judgmentally, we actually listen to them.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a lot
makes
of it's just
huge
listening.
Makes a difference when you take a kid and you just listen to them and you treat them like you believe them and, you know, you believe their story, because so many people are going to look at them and tell them they're crazy.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And if you treat them like a human, you know, a person, you know, if you treat them like they've got feelings and they can open up to you, then that's half the battle there, because they don't feel alone. You know, it's when they feel alone that they're in more danger. They don't need to be isolated.
No.
That's when things like Chris trying to kill himself, you know, will take place. So we've been able to use a lot of those experiences with the paranormal and stuff, and we actually have incorporated some of them into the book. You know, there are some scenes that we've written about, and I'm just going to try to find one of them. But the you know, the thing is that it's been very helpful, and in the second book, we're actually going to have a paranormal investigator.
Nice.
The girlfriend, and I'll go ahead and say this. It's not too big of a spoiler. The girlfriend of the detective, he meets in the first book, he meets his girlfriend, and she works at an inn. She works at the local inn, and so what he doesn't know is that inn is, you know, that she's used to doing a bunch of stuff with regard to the paranormal, and so she actually helps him with the investigation because she has the equipment. She's able to talk to the spirit, so and, you know, through the spirit box and through other things, and they get, you know, some information through that. So that's going to be helpful in the second, but more so than the first. So.
Yeah, I think that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Some excitement to the story, which it already sounded really good. Like what you wrote and what you read, I think sounded really good, and how you were really, you know, you guys were really descriptive about, you know, getting a visual of the atmosphere, the wind blowing, and, you know, stuff like
mm-hmm.
that, details. Details are important when you're reading a book.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you don't know what the scene looks like or feels like, then you just can't. There's no way you can, you know, you can understand what the character's going through completely, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think we have somebody on hold.
Yes.
Would you like to
it's
bring
Jennifer.
That person? Oh, nice.
It's Jennifer.
Nice. I answered a call in. Hi, Jennifer.
Jennifer, you there?
Hello. How are you guys doing this evening?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing just great. Hanging in there.
You know Kimberly, right?
Oh,
friend.
Yeah. She is awesome.
Oh, well, thank you. Hi, Jennifer.
You're welcome. Hey.
Yeah. So, Jen, what have you been up to? You kind of went missing in action on a case or something, huh?
Oh, dear God. Two at once. So you have to decipher which one needs the most attention and kind of go from there.
Kevin's been kind of doing the same the last couple of days, I think.
Yep.
What kind of cases are you doing? Do you do the same ones I do, Kevin?
I try not to do those type of cases, Jennifer, but they always seem to find me. And so, yes, I actually am doing a very evil case right now.
Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, I'll just leave it at that. It's just getting really bad out there.
Hey, I just did a case. George Nori had a case here in St. Louis, and he put me on it, and I went, and there was, like, a dog that was being attacked. So I went and did a little mini investigation. And I called up Jen, and we did some prayers and stuff like that. And Jen, I talked to her yesterday, and she said the dog has not had one of the problems since I left.
Oh, good, good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. You know, sometimes these spirits, like, this is what I've learned, is sometimes these spirits, they just need somebody to come in and say, hey, you know what? Like, this is not okay, this is not okay, and this is not okay. And if you continue to do it, guess what? I'm going to come back, and I'm going to get rid of you for good. So, if you want to be here, play nice, or don't play at all. And I don't know, that's just kind of the approach that I, like, I'll come back, and I'll get rid of you. Like, I'll just get rid of you. That's what I tell them.
You know,
well,
you gotta
to that blessing or prayer or whatever, hopefully, you know, that also got whatever it was, you know, hey, you're not welcome here. It's not okay.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not, you know, it's easy for us. We become desensitized, you know,
yeah.
to a degree.
Yeah.
And to these people, it's terrifying. Even if you've got a shadow person, that's Uncle Dan or whatever, it's still terrifying.
Well,
and you just have to take
a child or a dog. Or,
yeah. Oh, of course. Especially when children are involved. That's just heartbreaking.
Yeah,
yeah, that's what we were just talking about, that.
Yeah,
with
our
children.
Because yeah.
the children, you know, the children are, you know, that's such a important stage of their development, you know. And if they, you know, somebody like, you know, that was like 5 years old, like Chris was, you know, and to have 5 years of his life basically almost stolen from him nightly, you know, because of spirits, you know, it's just terrible.
Yeah, I do. I've dealt with that. I have 4 kids, and I've dealt with 2 of them experiencing stuff since the age of 3. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think to myself, God, if they would have had a different parent, like, how would they deal with it? But, frightened, you know. I've seen fear in my kids' face when they've had an experience or something, and you know, I know that like they're genuinely seeing things when they go to school, and you know, like my daughter, she has her boyfriend, and but she's 5. But, you know, that's her boyfriend. And, you know, she tells him about the shadow man in her room. And, like, she sits there and has a full-blown conversation for, like, 20 minutes telling this kid about the shadow man in her room. This kid's telling her about the ghost in his closet. And this is how it got brought up. And, you know, I show up at school and they're like, Jody. I'm like, oh, God.
Yeah.
No, I'm not doing this. I'm like, okay. And then I had her reading a teacher at school, and she was correct with her reading. And, you know, it was like, oh, shit. You know, like, you can't. I'm like, how do you know this stuff? And she's like, I just know stuff.
And it's like, all right, well, some stuff you just can't, like, float, okay? Especially, like, at school to, you know, a teacher about her private life, you know, her love life. Like, my fucking daughter nails down teacher having an affair with another teacher at school. Called it out in front
of
me. Yeah, like my daughter ran up and she was like, your boyfriend's blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, oh, shit. And, like, the other teacher was
crazy. Shame on them for setting that kind of example.
Huh?
I said shame on those teachers for having setting that kind of example, because kids aren't stupid. They catch on.
Yeah, some more than others, you know?
Yeah, I'll say.
Like, there was probably a room full of people, but they didn't even notice. Like, but my daughter just was reading body language, probably, and just paying attention. Which,
yeah, exactly.
You know, it's part of what psychics do because, you know, there have been proven theories that by sitting with somebody and talking to them, you can have them answer everything you need to know about them, but then blinking their eyes when you get to where you're wanting to hit, you know.
Right.
And body language can tell you everything.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the police are trained to know that.
But a lot of people don't.
I got a question for Kimberly.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a
you studied
in theological stuff? Jody and I talk about this all the time. We've said it numerous times on the show. When we talk to different guests out there in the paranormal field and whatnot, you know, there's so much emphasis in TV and Hollywood on what scares people, you know, the evil stuff. But there's hardly any stories out there or books where it's all centered around angels. You know, one of my favorite TV shows was back when Michael Landon did Highway to Heaven.
That's fine, Angel. Or Highway to Heaven, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I'm writing a blog on angels, on angelology, Kevin. That's so wow that you said that. Wow. Yeah.
Kimberly, haven't you noticed that yourself, you know, as far as the way the mindset of today's society is, it's more about what scares you and things in life, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Right. And that was kind of, in a way, the kind of in our book that's a little bit of the twist in it, that the spiritual stuff is actually not the scarier stuff. I mean, yeah, it's kind of creepy like you normally would experience, you know, when you have a shadow person. I mean, it can be a creepy experience,
right.
You know, especially if somebody's new to it. But they aren't the bad guys. The bad guy's the killer, you know. And
right.
You know, so in the book we have those the creepy factor with regard to the spirits, but we didn't want the spirits to be the bad guy. You know, it seems like their spirits are usually the bad guys.
Yeah,
you know, they always like paranormal activity and all that stuff, and they're always doing stuff to people. And then, like, okay, for instance, I did find, can I read this one? I found a paranormal, one of the passages. You may read this so you can see kind of a difference on the approach. Okay, so Deputy Williams, just so you know, he's our main detective, okay, and he's going to be kind of like our hero in the whole thing. So it's a large wooden door closed behind Deputy Williams as he entered the monastery. He had gotten there a little early, and the forensics teams had not yet arrived. Recalling the years he had spent on campus throughout his school years, he began to look around as he headed through the foyer. With every step he made on the cold stone floor, the resounding echoes filled the hallway as he walked down the hall. The rumblings of thunder from the storm vibrated throughout the building. while strong winds could be heard rushing through the bell tower. Outside, an unusual clashing of winter pressure fronts was providing a natural light show as the snow turned into cold rain. Turning on the lights, he gazed all around and lifted his eyes up towards the large chandeliers hanging from the ceiling. Wien thought to himself, wow, there's been a lot of thunder this week. However, this place is definitely better than the usual sites I have to be at. Turning his attention towards the intricate hand-carved designs in the ceiling and the wall, he thought, I wonder how many days of work it took to do that piece, to take a piece of wood and make it to look that amazing. Sorry. I messed that up. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on.
It's okay when that happens.
Ah. Yeah, I was. Oh, hold on. Dang it. Where was it? I accidentally pushed the wrong button and it moved. Dang it. Sorry.
It's okay. Are you on it?
Sorry. You can talk about. Oh, wait. I went way far away. Okay. Hold on. So Deputy Williams, basically, just so you know, while I'm finding this, he's just finding out. They're just finding out about what's going on with regard to these, you know, these murders and stuff. He's starting to investigate, you know, a little bit, and so he's gone into the monastery, and he's trying to check it out to make sure that it's, you know, it's safe. Hold on. There, wait, I just had it. Hold on. Okay, there we are. Hold on. Okay, sorry about that. He wondered, let me see. Let me go down. Looking towards the main cathedral entrance, he saw another set of rustically ornate wooden doors with bowls of holy water resting on the small tables to set on either side of the doorway. The deputy reverently walked over the doorway towards the bowl and filled with sanctified water. With the tips of his finger, he touched the top of the water and made the sign of a cross, starting with the forehead. Moving his hand down to touch his stomach, he then reached to his left chest and finished his sign of the cross on his right side. Reaching the arched doors of the sanctuary, gently pushed the massive doors open. Dark shadows played and danced along the tiles of the ancient stone floor as the weathered slab of heavy wood swung silently on well-greased hinges. The deputy's gaze was instantly drawn to the riot of colors cast on the floor by the broken glass, like the broken glass of a stained window from those stained windows. They mirrored as the faint light shone through them. At the far wall, he focused towards the huge wooden crucifix of Christ that hung from each side of the altar, two figures looked at each other. On the left, Mary, the mother of Christ, gazed lovingly on the opposite side. Halos hovered over the heads as they reached out towards one another. At their feet, small red candles burned in homage to them. Suddenly, lightning struck loudly and the lights flickered. Treading softly up the aisle, his heavy footsteps were muffled by the thick carpet. A deep boom resounded throughout the empty sanctuary. Stopping suddenly, he turned around in time to witness the door shutter as it closed. At the rear of the sanctuary, two golden angels peered down at him from the railing of the balcony. He could almost hear the young tenor voices singing in unison. As Deputy Williams pivoted and walked towards the front, he let his hand drift over the top of each pew. The handcrafted redwood pews had been placed on the monastery over 100 years earlier. The rainbow of light began to dim and fade, giving a sinister feel to the already cold and eerie atmosphere that made the deputy's hair stand on the back of his neck. You know how that is, huh? His breathing waned as he had a distinctive sensation that someone was staring at the back of his head. An intense flash blazed throughout the room as a bolt of lightning hit near the monastery, causing the lights to flicker. Williams was startled as the deafening sounds rolled throughout the immense building. Get a grip, Williams, he thought.
He stopped for the moment and turned around to find a shadowed nun standing on the closed wooden entrance. Recalling old horror movies of his youth, the fear overwhelmed the deputy for a moment. Instinctively, he stepped back in recoil and tripped over the end of the pew. He looked back at the door as the nun vanished before his eyes. Trying to determine where the nun had gone, Williams shot a gaze in all directions and placed his right hand over his pistol. Unfastening the strap, he was ready to defend himself if necessary. Making his way towards the front, Deputy Williams slowly walked up some steps towards the short marble table. On each end, candlesticks adorned with crosses and small flames stood diligently against the encroaching shadows. In the center, a small tray was gently draped with a white linen cloth. Lifting the hem of the fabric, Williams revealed an ornamental wine goblet with a small flower motif and etched vines. Picking up a plate, he was mesmerized by the intricate designs. The polish was so shiny that he could see his reflection on the finish. In the reflection, William saw the nun staring back at him. He froze for a second, unsure what to do, but still keenly aware of his surroundings. Focusing on the plate, he watched as the nun vanished once more. Turning around quickly, he saw nothing but empty space. Who is that? Out of the shadows, a creaking noise caught his attention. Stopping dead in his tracks, he listened for where it came from. Pulling out his pistol and holding it in front of me, he cautiously began to walk down the steps, heading towards the sound. Upon hearing a creak, Williams looked around and whispered to himself, "Is there someone here, or am I going crazy?" His heart raced as he proceeded over the small shrine of candles that normally flickered with soft bursts of light onto the walls. As the chills seemed to pass right through his body, the hair on his arms stood up on end. Looking around to make sure nothing surprised him, he took a match and lit one of the candles. As the flame suddenly went out, Williams felt another chill run through his body. Turning around immediately, he found a nun with long, wavy blonde hair staring back at him. Clothed in a white apron with black dress, she wore no habit. The ghostly nun looked in at him and asked, "What about me? My soul needs her too. My life was taken from me." Lightning flashed outside again, filling the room with a loud clash that vibrated throughout the monastery. Rolling thunder rumbled throughout the building as the spirit suddenly disappeared. Light flickered from the chandelier as it swayed from side to side. There was no wind and no draft, yet the chandelier continued to swing. Yes. Deputy Williams quickly prayed that he wouldn't see her again. He flinched as he felt a touch on his left shoulder. "Get away from me! Get away from me!" he shouted as he stepped back. "Christopher," the voice whispered again. "Christopher, I'm not going to hurt you. I'm here to warn you. Please listen to me." "Warn me about what?" he asked, still holding his gun ready. "Christopher, the murderer is going to strike again. It's not stopped. The murderer is not finished." "You aren't real," the deputy shouted. He flinched again as he felt another touch on his shoulder. "God, make her go away." Deputy Williams turned around to scan this room again. Right in front of him, a nun stood solemnly quiet. "All right, Christopher, I'll leave you alone." And this nun said as she turned and walked towards the altar, vanishing right before his eyes. So, I mean, there's more to it, but you get the idea that the spirit here isn't the bad guy, you know?
Right. Legitimate, what do they call it? What's the word?
Apparition?
Yeah, I guess. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, we wanted it more realistic. You know, so many of the stuff that's out there is just stupid, you know?
Oh, amen.
There is a lot of stupid stuff out there. You're absolutely right.
So, I mean, it's either over the top or it's, but to me, this is more real. You know, this is if you go into a monastery, you know, I'm not saying that this actually happened, but, you know, it's plausible. You know, you go in there. It's not always the chairs being thrown across the room, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
But she's actually trying to help. And you can, I'm sure you got an idea that that is the woman that was killed at the beginning, you know, in the prologue. This is that nun.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That was killed. And so, you know, she comes back and she has purpose, you know.
Yeah. And what's
something realistic for people to enjoy? You know,
mm-hmm.
nothing that's going to give them nightmares. That's completely unrealistic.
Right. I mean, it's not that there aren't some scenes that aren't going to be scary, but you know, not an entire book of it, you know? Some of it's more subtle.
Right.
So,
because I know.
Bible College as well?
The what?
About you, Kimberly? Didn't you go to Trinity Bible College as well?
Yeah, that's where I went to Trinity College, Trinity and College and Seminary.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay, I didn't carry or anything like that. I just did like one of the longer courses, a 3-year course on demonology. But I thought that you were the other one that had been to one of the branches. They have different ones throughout the United States, I think.
Yeah, I went to the main one in Newburgh. Indiana is the one I was at, and they actually it was a pretty good experience. I was pleased with, you know, the classes I took and everything. What I liked about them was that they weren't as focused on denominations.
Exactly.
They were more concerned about the overall theology and stuff, and so that's what I liked
right.
about them. It wasn't about division.
People.
Yeah, it wasn't about division.
Yeah,
exactly.
Too
you can gain perspective from other people. You may
right.
not always agree with them, but you can
okay.
at least get a different. Yeah, that's okay. You can agree to disagree,
yeah.
but and you don't have to be mean about it. You
know? Exactly. Amen. Can I get a
hallelujah?
Tell me about it. You can agree without degrading somebody.
Kimberly, do you remember at the Stanley, me getting told that I was evil? Were you outside when that was happening to me?
Well, you were told that you were with. Oh yeah, I remember that. That was horrible.
That was awful.
I remember
that. Do you know
that
I am continuously treated like that in the paranormal field?
That's a shame.
No. Yeah, I don't think that's good.
Not right. People need to sit in judgment on themselves, you know,
mm-hmm.
and focus on their own wrongs and focus on getting their life, you know what I mean, instead of everybody else.
This woman just flat out freaking attacked me, though. Like, I was just standing there smoking a cigarette, minding my own business, and she came up to tell me that I was freaking evil. And
yeah, I do remember that, and that was... That was uncalled for.
Oh my God!
That doesn't show me any. I was talking to somebody. I was actually kind of focused on this on Facebook a little bit a few days ago, and it was like, you know, why do people have to? You know, it's not always about this or that. It's about treating people. And, you know, it's about the fundamentals and treating people well and not being judgmental and listening to each other. And then we come together and we try to come to some common ground, you know, if we can.
Right.
But we don't all know everything. You know, none of us are perfect.
There's
none of us are all knowing.
There's nothing set forth. There's no governing, no rules set forth to follow by our forefathers, for lack of better words. There's no manual that says what's right or wrong.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so,
you know, we're
like,
all going into this blindly, you know, but people don't want to, you know, want to admit that. They want to, oh, I know this, or, you know, oh, well, she's on TV, so she must have 100 years experience, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or she's evil because she just talked about the ways that our forefathers used paranormal and how they made contact. And that's what I did. I did like a 30-minute talk or something like that. And I had people doing all kinds of different experiments and talking about, like, how Nostradamus did it and how, you know, basically we have all this great technology, but what is it really proving? What is it really done for us? And, you know, I think sometimes we need to go back to the basics. How are these people doing? What were they doing that was working for them? Let's not forget about that. And I think that was, like, I was proud of what I did. You know what I mean? Because I got the people that were listening to me, I got them interacting with me and just, you know, talking about what they were doing and when they did it, like, after they did it, they spoke. And, it was, you know, it's like you're going to call me evil because I just brought things in that people haven't used or done in probably nobody in our paranormal field, you know? I had people carrying in the water, mirrors, the Gonsfeld, and, you know, I thought it was a pretty cool little thing that I put together, you know, and I actually put some fucking thought into it. And it's like, wow, you're going to base me being evil on that? That's fucked up. That's judgment right
there. That's unprofessional, too. And, and what it does, other people seeing that, it just brings us down even further. It just gives more people of a reason to say we're nothing, you know, but a bunch of hokum. You know, all we're trying to do is get a fast dollar or get, you know, and that's not fair. You know, I mean, that's a horrible thing. You go to somewhere, you're sharing your knowledge, you know, because that's just what it's about, to learn from one another. Like, country cannot, country divided against itself cannot stand. It's the same thing. She is there to share her knowledge, and she has to deal with that crap. You know,
but if
I mean,
I were a man and I did that, I guarantee I wouldn't have been treated like that. I wouldn't be, you know. I think women, you know, a lot of people, a lot of men in this field trying to repress us. And, you know, I've talked to some people in the field that have been in it for 25 years. And they say they have watched so many men run women out of this field by being cruel and judgmental and, you know, like they just gang up on each other until somebody just says them out, you know, I'm done. I can't, like, deal with this shit anymore.
I understand. And the thing is, like, just even the other day, even just in my writing, I had somebody, and I won't say any names, but I had somebody kind of get on me because they were like, well, how could a Christian write about demonic activity and stuff? And I said, what are you talking about? Well, you've got paranormal in your book. I'm like, so? There's paranormal activity in the Bible.
Thank you.
And the Bible talks about Christ. And this is written about.
And
I'm serious. You look in Matthew after Jesus dies, and it talks about spirits, the holy people that had died, and it says that in the Bible, and it says that they are going through the holy people, not the unclean spirits, the clean ones, and it's saying they go through the holy city. And they were going to tell about what had been done.
Yes,
those are dead people.
And
those were spirits. They ignore it. They ignore it.
Right.
And so, I even said that to the guy. And I said, then explain, okay, why, you know, if all go, basically, some people would think that all goes for demons, which is a bunch of, you know what? But anyway,
big difference.
Yeah, there's a difference. And I say, well, you can feel that I have a gift of discernment. I can tell when I go into a room if there's a spirit in there. I can generally tell whether that is a positive spirit or a negative spirit. And I said that you can tell the energy. Well, I said because I have discernment. And he took that and says, well, you know, that you shouldn't be seeking out energies. I said, what are you talking about, seeking out energies? He says, well, that's what you said. I said, no, that's not what I said. I said, that I can distinguish the difference between them. Because it's just like when you go into a room and you can you know when a mood is negative. You know when a mood is positive, right?
Oh, yeah, you know that feeling. You know it. Like, you can't.
Exactly.
It's like a detective walking into a building and smelling death. They know.
Right.
They know that smell. They, you know, we know that feeling. We know when our electromagnetic field is off. And if it is giving a bad vibe, we know to proceed with caution or to back the fuck up.
Right.
We
and
do.
That's the whole reason. And I said, by the way, discernment is a spiritual gift mentioned in the Bible. And he says, well, you're supposed to take. And I said,
exactly.
It's one of the gifts of the Spirit. Now, you can't pick and choose what part. It is.
I'm so glad you said that, because somebody said to me, oh, your bio says you have the biblical gift of discernment. There's no such thing. I'm like, what?
Yes, there is. It's one of the gifts of the Spirit.
What if people think that the biggest demon fighters are? They're the chaplain.
The last thing Christ said before he went to be with the Father, when they said, Father, what shall we do when the enemy comes on the prowl or what have you, certain words of you, he goes, I leave you with the power of the Holy Spirit to cast out demons in thy name. That's like one of the last things he said before he went to be with the Father. Yeah, people,
right.
You know, discern that.
Well,
I'm not making up discernment, you know. I'm glad you said that, Kimberly. We need to go
believe you. The other thing that he talked about, and he brought this up, he says, well, it's supposed to be spiritual warfare. And he's sitting there doing all caps. I wasn't even doing all caps. And it's just supposed to be spiritual warfare and that sort of thing and putting on the armor of God. I said, yeah, but the armor of God does not mean that you strap it on and you sit there. The armor of God is you get it on and you actually do something about it.
Right.
Armor was not meant to be set to sit there in the closet. Armor is to be strapped on and to be used. You go into battle with your friends and your family, and you go and you try to you use that armor as protection against the enemy. If you don't face the enemy, how do you ever, you know, win?
Yeah.
If you don't go into battle.
The winning argument that I always come up with, especially being down here in East Texas, very, very big Bible Belt region, and you know, I've had clients call me, and, you know, they're Christians, they go to church, you know, regularly, whatnot, but all of a sudden, just hell has broken loose in their house, and they don't understand why, because of their faith, and blah, 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 this stuff, we're taught that this stuff doesn't exist, or it doesn't happen to us, you know, ghosts don't exist, and I'll say, okay, well, I want you to read in the Bible about when Jesus has his resurrection and he appears in front of his disciples and he talks to them and tells them, look, I'm not a flesh. I am a flesh. I am not a ghost. Well, why would Jesus himself refer to ghosts if they weren't real? You know?
Yeah. It's one of those things. The Bible's not going to give every single answer. There's so many things we just don't know, and everybody's entitled to their opinion without being berated or putting down another for their opinion. I've been called a Satanist by many churches because of what I do. Oh, I'm a Satanist.
They don't understand what you do. Exactly.
You know,
that's exactly what that guy was doing. That's exactly what that guy was doing. He was like, and he was berating me for, you know, doing any of this. And I said, well, I said, do you really know what I do? I said, me and Chris have a heart for kids that are dealing with this stuff and they don't know where to turn. And their parents don't know where to turn. They come to us and they ask us for help. Because everybody that they know is either laughing at them or they're scared to talk about it because they think they're going to think they're crazy. And a lot of them are in churches. And they're like, well, I ain't going to my church. It's been say much for, and if they don't go to their church, you know, the people in their church, because their people in church would think they were nuts. So,
who
do they go to?
I'm not an active member of any church because of that right there. I do.
Yeah, and that's a lot
church,
of mine, too.
And I do not, but I'm not an active member of them because of the hypocrisy and the divided denomination and the judgment. You know, if you're going to judge me, then you're putting down what Christ taught the people. You know, that's not being in thy name. You know, I mean, if you're going to sit there, people come to me, you know, and people come to, like, you. Or what, it's not like we're all out chasing people. You got to hear this. You know what I mean? I wouldn't deny anybody help. And you wouldn't deny anybody help. Jody wouldn't. Kevin wouldn't deny anybody help. It's not like it's somebody out there trying to create fear. I've been accused of creating fear of a false deity, a devil, that it does not exist.
Uh-huh.
And that's okay if that person believes that. But I'm not creating fear. If someone comes to me, if it's real to them, it's real. Point blank.
Yeah.
You know, even if
you're right.
They say nothing's going on, right? Say, I can't discern anything here, man. But it's real to her, so it's real. So what I'll do is have Bree and a priest, whatever the religion is or habit, and have somebody do a blessing and try to appease them the best that I can. Because, I mean, if you think about those words, if it's real to them, it's real. You can't just, you know, well, nothing's here and walk away and leave them. Oh, you're crazy. Yes, I'm not. That's not the way to do it, you know. And that's why so many people won't come forward.
Mm-hmm.
Or a lot of people, I don't know if y'all have run into this, some people are coming forward with false saying possession and demons and stuff, and it's not true. Even
right.
Even for extension.
Yeah.
And that right there really, really makes me mad. Because because that right there is showing them attention, and I believe, and this is just my humble opinion, in the law of attraction to a certain degree, you give it enough attention, and you could inadvertently open the door, and that's just me.
Right.
And by you saying you're possessed or saying you've got demons just because you want attention or you want to team out or whatever, you're very well could be, you know.
If you keep wishing, you're gonna have something you don't want.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Anyway.
That's why I don't do investigations often in my own home, because it basically stirs more up. If I don't have to, I don't do it. But
exactly.
You know, this is the other thing. This was the other thing, you know, and I said to him, was that I said that he kept on saying, well, you're supposed to judge, you know. I said, you're basically, when you come across that way, you come across like a judgmental person. I said, does somebody that is needing help want somebody that sit there and be judgmental over them? I said, no, they don't want that. He says, well, we are supposed to judge things. I said, no, you don't judge people. I said, you judge the fruit. It says you judge the fruit.
You'll
know them by their fruit. You're supposed to judge the fruit. If it's a bad tree, it has a bad fruit. If it's a good tree, it has good fruit. I mean, it says that. Okay.
Exactly.
Well, if we are helping people, and this goes for psychics and other people too, and mediums and stuff, it depends on the use of the gift. The gifts there are gifts that are given from God that we don't necessarily understand. It's how you use that gift that determines whether it's a good or bad thing. You know, if you're using it for good, if you're using it to help people, and say some, you know, psychics that turn around and help people solve murder mysteries and save kids and, you know, whatever, and find these missing kids and stuff. And, I mean, you're going to tell me that that's a bad thing? Really? You know?
Yeah.
You will know them by their fruit, you know.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I said, you can't say anything bad about what I'm doing. I said, you cannot say anything bad about what I'm doing.
No. The fruit.
No, this.
We're supposed to watch the fruits that we bear, and the fruits that you're bearing, Kimberly, are nothing but good intentions. You're not hurting anybody. some of these church people, and again, my dad was a reverend, and he was the first to say how disappointed he was in the body of Christ till the day he died, because there's no more church. It's nothing but a bunch of fiends and animals, as he called them, that there was no more body of Christ, that these Christians just have turned in nothing but a bunch of judgy McJuggers. You know, it was sickening.
And people have lost the heart. And I said you need to look at the heart of the scripture. The Jesus himself warned them of the sins of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And what that meant was the Pharisees basically were so caught up in all the details and all the laws and all the little things and how far they could walk on a Sabbath walk, you know, a Sabbath day, and how much they could carry and all this crap. They didn't make a hill's beans worth of anything. It didn't matter. And yet they were more focused on that crap than they were on the heart of the scripture, which was to be, you know, to love each other and to love your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. That's the two main things, did it not? Jesus said those are the two main laws, that nothing can be said against them.
Right.
So you do those two things, you basically summed it all up, you know. You're doing okay.
People run their mouth and they don't know the scripture, and they end up making fools of themselves, you know?
I mean,
before you start preaching and saying, you know, wagging your finger in someone's face, you better make sure that you understand the scripture yourself, because you just don't, I don't know, I just don't think it's fair. You just don't do that to people. You know,
no.
That's
the wrong heart.
Right, and then people think God is like that. We're representing God, the fruit that we bear. And so many people have said to me, you know, Jennifer, I believe in you, but I'm sorry, but, you know, X, Y, because they've had horrible run-ins with the church, and so have I. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really upsetting because they associate that with God. They don't.
Right.
You know?
To me, they're a bad example. They're a bad example.
Oh, God, yes, they are. They're the worst.
And so, you know, and they don't even realize it because they're being arrogant and egotistical, and it's just ridiculous.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the Bible talks about pride.
You know, what you were talking about with intent, you know, that goes back to what we talked about earlier with Jody. Jody was bringing awareness to things that investigators used in the past, even people that were trying to predict the future. Nostradamus gave me into water. You know, it wasn't like she was saying, okay, here I am. I'm going to summon the most evil thing in this session that I'm doing. Her intent was to bring awareness to things that have gotten lost in the shuffle of technology. Am I right, Jody?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
You know,
oh, yeah.
And also the point was also don't read it. Don't believe everything that you hear on the Internet, because, you know, there's a lot of stuff that is out there that, you know, it goes back so much further, but what you'll find is so much more recent, because that's all they really care to educate you about. You know, the United States has an entire history that is being hidden from our people. You know, we're governed by what we learn by our government. You know, we're learning what they teach us about our history, which, in my opinion, there's a lot of unspoken about history in the United States.
You know what's kind of cool, though? This was kind of something that we did last year when Chris and I talked about history and everything. You know, I don't know if you've ever read his blog. You know, when basically, he always we ended up investigating. Somebody asked us to investigate last year. A mill, and it was actually the first African-American-owned mill in the entire United States, and it's here where we live. And it was actually in 1904, believe it or not, that it was shut down. It finally shut down because of a bunch of economic stuff in the cotton industry. But anyway, we found out through this investigation that Chris's own great grandfather was the last manager of that mill.
Wow.
Of the very mill that we were asked to investigate, we had no clue. So what I'm getting at is I believe that when we have questions and that you know, about our history and stuff like that, that if we're really seeking, that those answers find us. Because he was wondering what happened to all of, you know, his family had a bunch of wealth and everything. They had a bunch of land. And he wondered what happened to all that land. And what happened was when the cotton field went under, and the owner, who was the African-American that owned it, Warren C. Coleman, basically died, then all the funds dried up, and he ended up selling all his land to pay the employees. So Chris's great-grandfather was the one that sold his land to pay the employees. And but see, he had always wondered that since he was a kid, had wondered that about his family's history and what happened to their land and what happened to all this stuff. And then we end up finding the answer through a paranormal investigation that we didn't even seek out. Somebody asked us to go.
Right,
and we had
right.
no clue. So I think that when we're actually seeking the right things, and when we've got the right heart, I believe that those answers that we've been seeking will find us. You know, it's just a matter of time. You know, because that really, there is no other explanation than that answer found us. It was not the other way around.
Right.
And
yeah. You know, and I think a lot of the men in the paranormal, and I don't really care if I piss them off or not. I've pissed off people before, but oh well.
I think
a lot of the men in the paranormal, they think that they under, and I don't know their thinking, but I think a lot of them in their back of their mind, they underestimate women in the field, or you know, any kind of field. To be honest with you, I mean, guys, come on, you remember back to high school, most of the girls were smarter than the boys. I mean, I was number three in my class, but valedictorian and salutatorian were both girls. So, you know, I don't know. I guess they feel threatened when there's this, an intelligent, strong woman that stands up for what she believes in and tries to do what she wants to do as far as finding answers or, you know, in the field or whatnot, they go, she's full of a bunch of malarkey, and they try to shut them down when, in fact, they probably have come across things that those guys wish they had discovered on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of embracing the fact that, oh, she might be coming up with something, you know, I never thought of that. Maybe I need to look into that. No, they want to bash and trash that woman, get her out of the way, because they're selfish about their own intent on what they're doing. That's my two cents on when seeing women in the paranormal.
Oh, I agree.
I think it's all out of jealousy. I really do. I mean, I've had several people that have written some more nasty reviews of Karen in my book, and those reviews were not about the story itself. It was about stupid stuff. It was nitpicky
stuff. That
shouldn't count.
No,
I mean, it's like, you know, we had some typos in there or something like that.
Aww.
Okay, I dare you to have 140 or 120,000 words and not have a typo in there. Come on. So,
you know
call me where
people,
it is. I'll fix it.
Yes.
So what? I don't care.
They,
yeah,
they
I don't care. But you know what I mean.
They nitpick. They look kiddly for anything to reach for a piece of sand when they get a castle. They have no eyes other than sitting on Facebook trolling 24/7, creating trouble. That's what it is. Shame.
Mm-hmm.
Shame.
Oh, I agree. And it's very frustrating because I don't do that to other people, but people do that to us, and
yeah.
it's Yeah. It just pisses me off.
Not nice.
We have another caller. He is on air. Are you there, Mr. Brad?
I just want to know, why can't we all just get along?
That's what we're asking.
Yeah. Because all those ladies want to hate on you, baby. Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you doing, Mr. Halo?
Oh, my gosh. Yes, hello, everyone. I've enjoyed the stories. Hello, Jennifer and Kevin and Jody. And last but not least, your lovely guest, Kimberly. How are you this evening?
Thank you. We're doing fine. Thank you very much.
I've loved your stories. They kind of one of them kind of creeped me out a little bit, but I find the murder mystery thing very, very interesting. And gosh, I'm sure you have stories for hours.
Oh yeah. I mean, well, you know, that's one thing that with me and my Chris, and we've been together for like 5 years. We might as well be married. But anyway, but basically, we sit there and come up with that. We'll sit there and brainstorm for like 5 hours. It's fun.
Yeah.
And in fact, oh, I got some good news though. You know all the creepy stuff that I've been talking about with his life, right? And
him
being haunted from the time he was five. Well, he actually pitched a movie producer about his idea for basically doing his life or part of his life. And it's a creepy, creepy version, though. It's kind of like it's based on true events, but it'll be one of these ones that we've upped the creepiness factor. And it's actually really, really cool. I'm having a lot of fun with it, with working with Chris. He'll sit there and he'll come up with this cool poem for the beginning that this little boy is going to be reading, and it's going to be creepy.
That's great.
So, but it's basically the story is going to be based on his childhood. And so we've actually, it's based on true events. And
nice.
So they pretty much have told, you know, they've asked him to write the screenplay. And the intent is that if they like the screenplay, they're going to do it.
Nice.
So we're real excited about that. So.
Well, best of luck to you to that, because that's exciting.
No, thank you. Yeah, I know that Chris is thrilled because, you know, he's wanted to do this forever. But it's fun to be working on the project with him, you know.
Yeah.
And,
well, that's great that you guys, like, you know, share the same interests and, you know, kind of get to be there for each other emotionally. But then,
definitely.
Also career-wise, too. That's some great support right there.
But interesting enough, with Karen, I have never actually met her in person. We have never met in person. We've only been friends. We started being friends on Facebook about 4 or 5 years ago. And we happened just to be, we've been friends already for a couple of years, and then she needed an editor, and she found out I was an editor, and we started talking about it, and it just kind of went from there. And then she ended up asking me to, we said, well, let's just collaborate on this, you know, work on it together. So, and I just find that interesting that now in the technology today and stuff that we can do stuff like that, where we can, you know, work with somebody across the country or around the world and still be able to accomplish these
wonderful
projects. You know?
I've met better
before. Before we run in
on Facebook, oh, go ahead.
But before we run real quick, before we run into archives and our live listeners can't listen anymore unless they go to archives. Kimberly, where can they find your book?
You can find Secrets in the Shallows, and it's shallows, like shallow water, not shadows. It is, you can find it on Amazon. It's available Kindle and on in paperback. If you need a Nook or another format, if you want to get in touch with me on Facebook, you can author Kimberly Brulette, or author editor Kimberly Brulette, is what you can find me there. And then also mysteriumpublishing.com is our publishing company. So if you were to send an email to Mysterium, Mysterium publishing at yahoo.com, then, you know, I can actually get other electronic, I'm working on getting other electronic versions out. So I do have a PDF as well and an EPUB. So,
right.
But you can also find on Goodreads, we actually, if you go on Goodreads, Secrets and Shallows has its own page on there, as well as Kara and I both have our own pages on Goodreads, as well as Facebook. And then Twitter, my Twitter account is Write, or like W-R-I-T-E, Write, R-I-G-H-T for you. So Write for you is my Twitter account. So, and then KarenVanceHammond.com is also her website. So, but you should be able to, I mean, if you Google my name and if you can actually figure out how to spell it, then you should be able to find me pretty much right away. So.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on our show tonight.
No, I appreciate the opportunity. It was great catching up. It's been a while.
Yeah.
And Jennifer, I haven't spoken with you in a long time, so.
I know. Absolutely.
So. You kind of disappeared on us for a little while.
I took a 9-month hiatus, and I am refreshed and ready to roll.
Good. That's awesome.
Yes. Yes.
At least it was
Thank
for good
you.
Purpose.
Yes, it sure was. It was much, much needed, and I'll put it that way.
I understand. So. I understand. I know that it can be trying to go through a lot of stuff, you know?
Oh, absolutely, but everything is A-okay now.
Oh, good. That's awesome to hear.
Thank you.
But I do appreciate having me on, and I wish Karen could have been here, but you know, she would have loved to been here, I'm sure. But I think we're going to be on your other show on December 29th. I believe so.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
Karen's supposed to be joining me then, so because she'll be out, she'll be out on school vacation. Then, and we don't have to worry about how late she stays up.
That show, that's the first show that I started before I created this whole network of shows. Originally Unknown Paranormal Radio, but I changed the name. And Jeff and Martin Bravo and Jeffrey Sterl, they've been on the air with me for, it'll be 3 years next year. So, yeah, I think you were a guest, Kyle, I think the first year, I want to say. I know it's been a good while, but I know we've had you as a guest on that show, so it'll be awesome to have you back on there again.
Yeah, I think it was with Chris and I were on there for the other stuff. So, and we are planning on trying to kick up on that again next year. It's just been a very transitional year with trying to get the book written and trying to get his acting stuff going, and it actually is taking off, fortunately. So he's actually, like I said earlier, he's actually on a sleep. My mind's gone totally blank. I don't know why I'm having this. Yeah, Sleepy Hollow. Yes, Sleepy Hollow. He's on that set today. So.
Well, you tell Chris, I'm jealous of him that he's getting some acting gigs and I'm not.
He's working for him, I can tell you that, though. He doesn't even have an agent. He's been doing it himself. Good
for him. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's been working and hard and finding the listings and putting in the, you know, putting in the stuff for the casting. And they're actually getting ready to build the second largest film studio about 30 minutes from our house.
Wow.
The second largest film studio in the United States.
So
it's, they're actually tearing down an old mall that has pretty much been unused for about 4 or 5 years. And they're going to be building a film studio in Charlotte over the next couple of years. And it is supposed to be the second largest film studio in the United States. So we're real excited about that. That's going to be a lot of jobs.
So that's definitely definitely happening. Like it's all
happening. That is
okay.
happening. They've already started demo work.
There was
for about a year and a half they were debating on, you know, how the land was being. They knew that they wanted to use that land. But they had to figure out how to, you know, partition out the land in a certain way. So. And then what to do with it. So they ended up, they just settled it about a month ago.
Wow.
Yeah. It's been on they've been talking about it for a couple of years, though. So, but we have a lot of movies filmed around here. We've had Shallow Hal filmed here. We had The Hunger Games. We had Iron Man 2. We've had a ton of stuff filmed around here. There's an old Philip Morris plant. That isn't far from us. It's only about 5 miles from where I live. And they've used that because it's not used as the Philip Morris plant anymore. It was actually used for all that stuff that was for the Hunger Games, that was all inside in a stage.
Wow.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff that was all staged.
Oh,
so
I bet.
There was a huge sound stage in there.
Oh.
Hmm?
Oh, people make a big deal out of that movie. I want to see it.
Yeah. It is good. It is good.
Is it? Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, it's pretty good. So hopefully we'll be getting our movies going on pretty soon. I can't wait to see some of these other movies coming out. But,
yeah.
I know there's so many good ones coming out. I don't know if anybody's interested, but next Sunday at the 290 event, remake, and they haven't remade the Bonnie and Clyde 1967 with Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty as the two nights premiere. I'm not glamorizing Gangster. I want to point that out. I've already gotten some crap for that. It's the point that crime doesn't pay. Anyway, Saturday and Sunday, people. Between 9
well,
and
you
10,
can still think
me.
It's you can. You can still think it's a cool show, even if it's not necessarily, you know, come on.
The story fascinates me. We had to write about it. I remember in high school, the story just fascinates me. So, you know, between 9 and 10, Sunday and Monday, I will not answer my phone.
Well, thanks again, Kimberly, for coming on the show. It was a great show tonight.
Well, I appreciate it, and yeah, I had a great time. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah.
So we'll have to do this again sometime.
Yeah,
sometime soon.
Yeah, I wish you great success with your book.
Absolutely.
Thank you. And for those that that want, you know, to check out, there is actually about the first five chapters that are available on the preview. So you can actually read the first, like, up to five chapters without having to pay for it. So you can see whether or not you like it.
Sweet.
Oh, that's nice.
Well,
mm-hmm. You're going to love it. No doubt.
I hope not. I hope everybody likes it.
How could you not? It's wonderful. Well, I mean, you guys are definitely... You're very humble about it, but you guys you really know what you're doing, and you're really good people, and you really do your research, and you have your knowledge behind it.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we think that writers don't do it justice if they don't put the time in. You know, it's kind of like cheating your readers. At least that's my thought. You know, why have them pay for some book that you write to cheat them out of, you know, all that it could be? You know, I just don't agree with that. So,
cool.
But
well,
anyway,
we're gonna wrap everything up tonight. And like I said, Kimberly, you wish you all the success, and enjoy talking to you later this month.
Likewise, and y'all have a wonderful night.
You too.
All right.
My friend.
Thank
Take
you.
It easy.
You too. Okay, good night. Bye-bye.
All right.
Giddy up.
Jen,
well, thank you, Jen and Brad, for coming on.
Yeah.
Thank you for having
me. No problem.
And Mr. Brad. Yeah, we're still on air. Mr. Brad, we will. You'll be joining me as a guest co-host next Tuesday.
Oh, I can't wait, Kevin.
Oh, that sounded so romantic. I can't wait, Kevin.
We should.
No, you guys are going to have a blast. Who's on, do we know?
Next Tuesday, we have... Mr. Bill Householder, he has a paranormal group called Household Paranormal, and he's going to be joining us. I got his bio and everything. I'll send you all that, Brad, so that you know what's up.
So I can ask him proper questions and harass him if needed.
Yes, exactly.
Also, I have a web page. If you click on it, it says coming soon. It'll be live in a day or two. It's demonologyfromabiblicalpointofview.com.
Damn, that's a mouthful.
That's right, man. And I'd like to have, I'll put some links on there, link to, is it Unknown Radio Network? Is that the name of it?
Yeah.
If you would like, I would love to put a link on there and to anything else you guys got going on.
Very nice.
Sweet.
All right, well, guys, I'm going to play us out.
Bye.
Sounds good.
All right, good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Now I will tell you what I've done for you. 50,000 tears I've cried.